After 6 months of waiting, the oral arguments on the highly contested anti-terror law are here. The Supreme Court finally got everything together and picked a date, February 2. Solicitor General Jose Calida will defend President Rodrigo Duterte's pet law against 37 petitions, making the Anti-Terror Act one of the most challenged laws in Philippine history. Lawmakers, journalists, activists, teachers, laborers, a former soldier, priests, nuns, indigenous peoples, youth leaders, and even a TikToker have come together to strike out this law. They say the law targets critics of the government as President Duterte intensifies another war, a war on dissent. Hello, I am Lian Buon and you are listening to the Law of Duterte Land podcast, where we discuss controversial policies of the executive, gaps in the law, and court decisions that shake long-standing principles in the legal profession. This is a summary of the petitions against the feared anti-terror law. You will hear this phrase often, predicate crimes. In the old law, there were predicate crimes or common crimes, for example, murder, rebellion, or piracy. If these common crimes sow widespread fear, they are considered terrorism. For example, a person who bombs a park is not only a murderer, he's also a terrorist. In the anti-terror law, there are no predicate crimes, only 5 phrases that try to define what terror is. 3 of these phrases have the word intend. These are all under Section 4, the root of all problems. Petitioners say this is void for being vague. For example, under Section 4, a terror act is an act that intends to cause extensive interference with critical infrastructure. According to their petition, if retired Justices Antonio Carpio, Conchita Carpio Morales, and University of the Philippines professors criticize China, that can be considered an act that interferes with the diplomatic infrastructure in the country. They argue that under this vague definition, to be anti-China is to be a terrorist. After the law was signed in July, everyone was raring to file. The first Monday of the signing, 4 petitions were already filed, one of them by the law professors of the Far Eastern University, or FEU. The teachers feared teaching scholarly materials with the mere mention of communism will get them arrested. The Department of Education and the Commission on Higher Education are named support agencies in the anti-terror law. They fear this would lead to a change in curriculum, making our schools less critical. The government has a tired defense for this. Look at Section 4, they say. They point to a caveat that says dissent or protest is not an act of terror. But they also conveniently leave out the part of the caveat where it says, you need to prove that your dissent has no intent to cause harm. This essentially shifted the burden of proof to the suspects, which is why they call it a two-faced clause, a killer caveat. In the old Human Security Act, only a terror act and conspiracy to commit a terror act are crimes. In this new law, it is a crime to threaten to commit a terror act, to plan a terror act, to provide support to a terror group, and to incite to terrorism. If the definition of terror is vague to begin with, if being an activist is to be a terrorist, then will you be punished for encouraging protest? Is it a crime to provide transportation to activists? Under this law, guilt by association will be possible. Remember this. There are only 3 reasons where you can be legally arrested without a warrant. 1, if you are a fugitive. 2, if you are caught in the act. And 3, if the law enforcer has probable cause to believe that you had just committed a crime. Without those 3 conditions, law enforcers need a warrant from a judge. In this law, the Anti-Terror Council, a body of cabinet members, can give the authorization to arrest. It's like a warrant, only it doesn't come from the court and it can take anyone by surprise. Under the revised penal code, if you are arrested without a warrant, law enforcement has up to 36 hours to convince a prosecutor to charge you in court. If he fails to do that, then you must be freed. Even in a state of martial law, you can only be kept without a charge for 3 days. Under the anti-terror law, you can spend 24 days with the police or soldiers. Sangguniang Kabataan or SK leaders spotted this too. In the old law, once you are arrested, you must personally be presented to a judge before you are detained. The judge will check if you are safe and have not been tortured. In the anti-terror law, your arresting officers only need to write a judge. They can lie and say you're safe, and the judge, or anyone for that matter, will never know the truth. If you're charged under the anti-terror law, you can bail yourself out if it's a bailable offense, like inciting to terrorism. But you can be indefinitely detained if you are charged with a non-bailable offense like planning to commit terrorism. In the usual court process, if you are charged with a non-bailable crime, you can still apply for bail. In some cases, the judge grants bail when the evidence of guilt is not strong. If that happens to a suspected terrorist, under this law, the government can move to place the suspect under house arrest. There's no escaping if the government is determined to lock you up. The anti-terror law provides a lot of shortcuts for the government. Before, only a court can declare someone a terrorist, and only after a full trial has been done. In the anti-terror law, the court can declare someone a terrorist within 72 hours, even without a single hearing. Worse, the Anti-Terror Council has the power to designate someone or a group as a terrorist on its own, with hearings that are secret. The council can do this, and the Anti-Money Laundering Council can automatically freeze their assets. The AMLAC will do this even as it admits it is not fully equipped to financially investigate terror money.
But they also noted that the AMLC has no or lacks the investigative powers to perform that function.
That was AMLAC Chief Mel Rosella in a Senate hearing in October 2020. In this hearing, senators expressed concern that this power is dangerous. But the law has already taken effect, a law they voted for.
So that's a pretty broad power for the AMLC. I'm not sure if other countries have that same scope.
We must be careful that such powers, given falling in the hands of the wrong person, can be used for harassment.
During the Christmas season, the Anti-Terror Council designates the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army, or CPP-NPA, as terrorists. And AMLAC has moved to freeze the assets of the clandestine communists. Whose bank accounts will it close? AMLAC said, quote, related accounts, putting progressive groups in danger of losing access to their funds. The Nuns of the Rural Missionaries of the Philippines, or RMP, already got a taste of this, even before the enactment of the anti-terror law. Accusing RMP of funding communists, AMLAC froze the nuns' bank accounts using the Terrorism Financing Act. In this law, even the church will be persecuted, according to the Association of Major Religious Superiors in the Philippines, an influential Catholic group that was at the forefront of community resistance during Marcos's martial law. The Catholic leaders fear that because they work mainly to evangelize the urban poor, marginalized, and the oppressed, they can be charged with providing material support to terrorists. Activists have always feared for the most helpless targets of the law, those in the fringes of society, the farmers and indigenous peoples. And the fears were proven true. The first people charged under this law were two Aitas from Zambales who said they were escaping soldiers who were trespassing on their ancestral land. But the military accused them of shooting the soldiers. The Aitas are still detained. The law is so vaguely worded that lawyers themselves admit it will be difficult for them to defend those charged. And that's coming from not just any legal group, but the Integrated Bar of the Philippines, the mandatory organization for all Filipino lawyers. Perhaps the most impassioned and personal of the petitions are the ones filed by Moros. Zamboanga native Jimmy Bla filed one petition from jail. He was arrested in 2018 after being suspected of being an Abu Sayyaf terrorist. His petition and the other petition from Moros tell a story of repeated wrongful arrests, some from mistaken identity, some just out of pure religious discrimination. Market vendors, truck drivers, mosque-goers, Quran reciters are randomly picked, called extremists, dragged away, thrown in jail, just because they look or sound Muslim or their names are Muslim. In fact, there have been 73 Moros in jail since 2001, still awaiting trial up to now. There were also 44 Moros, including children, in jail for a year over the 2013 Zamboanga siege. They were eventually released because of lack of evidence.
Hindi lang marunong magtagalog. Mali-mali yung sagot niya kasi hindi nga talaga siya marunong magtagalog. Nahuli siya. Namatay na lang sa loob ng kulungan bago sinabi ng korte na absuelto na siya. Tingnan at tanungin natin yung mga experts o yung ating mga kababayan kung ano yung karanasan nila dyan sa mga pag-aaresto na maari na hindi nararanasan to ng mga gumawa ng batas.
That was the voice of Basilan Representative Mujib Hataman, also one of the petitioners. Two Muslim lawyers are among the 13 oralists handpicked by all the petitioners to present on February 2. Let me leave you with this quote from their petition. "The experiences of our elders under martial law were extremely horrendous, too excruciating to forget. Peace at any price is not peace, and the human cost is beyond exorbitant." I am Lian Buan. Thank you for listening. Follow us on our social media accounts for more news, videos, and podcasts. Listen to Rappler's podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and wherever it is you get your podcasts.